I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 96 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Curtis Blaze, who you've probably heard on so many other podcasts, some of them his own, some of them part of the group stuff that Jim O'Kane has produced, but you know, it's always great having Curtis back. So welcome back to the show, Curtis.
It is such a pleasure to be on the air with you again.
Can you believe it's been five seasons since we recorded an episode together? It was back in the Great Escape.
Wow. I was just trying to think of that. What's the movie that we did together?
We talked about the Great Escape. And you had a day where we talked about photography. Which I remember right. That you loved talking about that. So that really worked.
So long ago.
Yes, wow. It was. That was in June 2021.
Time flies. Very, very long time.
Yes, it does. But
well, I'm so happy to be back on. I love this movie so much.
All right. We will definitely get into that. I will definitely want to hear that story from you. And just to remind everyone, you're probably wondering, why is there an episode today on a Sunday? And that's partially because, as I mentioned on Friday, for the next 5 weeks, you are actually going to be able to get an episode every day of the week, 7 days a week. So things are going to be a little different with the way that my guests show up, because it won't be Monday through Friday. Some of them will, like Curtis, will be here Sunday through Thursday. And then the next one will be here Friday through Friday through Tuesday, you know, things like that. So it's just going to be fun, you know, so enjoy. And that also means that the segments are going to be a little changed around, but we're still going to get all five segments in. So no need to worry about that. Minute 96 begins with Potter upping the ante and ends with George starting to pray. So you actually just mentioned a minute ago, how much you love this movie. So why don't you first tell me and everyone else, what's your background with this movie, Curtis?
Well, I spent most of the first half of my life never seeing this movie because it has such a schmaltzy title. I was probably 30, I bet, when I saw this movie for the first time. And I always hated the idea of it. It's a Jimmy whatever Stewart movie. It's a fake Frank Capra movie. You know, all of the tropes, or not tropes, but all of the memes from it. Every time a bell rings, the angel gets his wings. All the stupid schmaltzy stuff that I've always heard about this movie. Just big eye roll for someone in their 20s, right? Who's too cool for school. And then I met my wife, and she's like, this is my favorite movie ever, and I watch it every Christmas, and I'm like, So I make myself get through it the first time, and now I am the most enthusiastic viewer of this movie every year. I'm the one that says, no, we still have to watch this movie. We have
Wait,
to get
you
done.
Like it more than your wife? You have to convince her to watch it now?
I don't have to convince her. It's just like, you know, we've been watching this like for 26 years in a row. Maybe we could watch something else. And I'm like, well, we could watch something else and this.
that's where great. I am with this movie right
now. Yeah, the first time I watched this movie, I just was an unenthusiastic, drug-along viewer. Not wanting to see it, rolling my eyes.
Wow.
And now here we are.
And we get to start off, you know, we continue from where we ended off on Friday with George and in Potter's office with his man standing by scowling. And, you know, Potter basically started trying to, I don't even know the right word of what he's trying to do. He's trying to belittle George even more. Do you think he's trying to drive him to suicide?
Oh, wow. That's a heavy question to start with. I don't know if he's trying to drive him to suicide. I think he is. I'm not going to say names and talk about personal stuff here about the politics in the town where I live, but there's a person like this in my town. And I think.
Wait, like George or like Potter?
Like Potter.
Oh, okay.
And I think that they would be delighted if someone like George committed suicide, but that would be more than they could hope for. Putting him in jail, I think, is how much he aspires to.
Okay.
If he committed suicide, it would just be the cherry on the cream on right. top of the ice cream.
Okay. All right. I mean, we've talked about this numerous times. Do you think that Potter is a better villain than Hans Gruber, or is Hans Gruber a better villain?
Wow. Well, Potter is, like I say, there's someone like this kind of in my town, and Potter to me just rings true. Like, people, there just are people like Potter. There's kind of a Potter for every town, in fact. One of the things about this character is that you recognize him because there's that person. In your tiny town or in your big town, that guy is happening in real life right now. If I say, imagine that guy, you can go to your town and think, oh yeah, that's Mr. Whatever. And so I think he's scarier, especially to people kind of middle-aged and older, because of the realness of him, compared to a Gruber, who is someone we could kind of see ourselves wanting to be in an adventurous, evil way.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. It makes a lot of sense. That's very fair. I personally think that Potter is... he's more evil than Gruber. Gruber's just greedy. He wants money. Potter wants more than that.
For sure, Potter is evil.
Yeah.
He has a black soul, and he's a terrible person, and the only respect he gets is through fear.
Correct. And that's why he doesn't like George, because George doesn't fear him and doesn't respect him. For that very same reason.
Right. And those people generally aren't respected. They are only feared.
Do you see that there is a statue on the like left-hand side of where George and Potter are sitting?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Isn't that Napoleon?
Yes.
What is that?
That is Napoleon.
He's got a life-size statue of Napoleon sitting on the side of his desk, staring at you while he stares at you.
That is correct.
God. Oh my God, this guy. I don't know if you guys have talked about this, but have you talked about the way that he has his wheelchair, whatever thing, so that it's higher than the person that's sitting across from him?
Well, no, it's not just that he has the wheelchair. The chair across the table from him is low on purpose.
Right. That's what I
mean. Right. It's not as if the wheelchair is higher. The wheelchair is at a normal height, but the chair where whoever he's talking to. Yes, of course, that's psychological, you know, that he's looking down upon someone and the person has to look up at him. Now, I think you were going in a different place with the wheelchair. You know, I've asked this question numerous times without a sufficient answer is, if Potter's in a wheelchair, how does he get to the second floor of the building alone?
I love it. Well, wow, that's a good question. I think he uses his evil telekinesis to levitate the chair up the steps.
My theory is he's not really crippled, and that he's just faking it. They try and garner more sympathy from people, you know, and basically catch them off balance. That's what I think he's doing.
What if he's got his what if he's got his bodyguard just manhandling him up these things off camera?
Oh, that's possible also. Let's put it this way: in a real world, that's the possibility. That, you know, that that's what happens. But you know, that's why he has to have this guy.
Or perhaps even, I'm just trying to now think if this is real and if he isn't so evil that he's faking being crippled. If this is just the real life and this guy just is in a wheelchair and they have to figure this out, probably the bodyguard slash chauffeur slash butler slash dude has like a board in the car that he probably takes along with him and pulls him up the stairs bodily on a board.
Yeah, but there are a lot of stairs to get to the second floor. You know, we're not talking about just three little stairs or anything like that.
Yeah, true.
Or, I mean, I have a sister-in-law who's in a I don't even know what you want to call it, a cart type of thing. You know, the mechanized cart or whatever. And you know, there are times when she needs to have like a board put down so that she can get over, you know, some sort of curb or something like that. You know, that's what it is. But that's for one. That's, we're not talking about a whole, an entire flight of stairs.
Flight of stairs. Well, I've seen other, in other older movies, and I'm not going to remember which one, but I've seen this happen where the person is an old person like Potter, and they are just kind of fireman carry up the steps. And then the person's got the wheelchair in the other hand.
Hmm. Okay.
And they just carry him up, and then they stick him back in the chair when they get to the top.
Interesting.
I mean, they had to start developing this stuff after World War II. They had to start figuring this out. Oh, this is before World War II. Wait.
No, this is after.
No,
this is after World War II. This is 19. This is the end. This is December. Actually, we know exactly when this is. It's December 24th, 1945.
Yeah. Okay. I forgot that his brother went on. Okay, so
I mean the reason I had read on about stuff about this movie, about the fact that the reason that Potter is in a wheelchair is because Leno Barrymore was in a wheelchair at the time. He had broken his hip. You know, so it, like the character wasn't originally supposed to be in a wheelchair.
Oh, that adds so much though.
Wow. Oh, for sure, especially when
Frank Capra.
Especially when you use my theory that he's faking it, you know.
I love it. Wow, that's a really good theory. Okay, so here's where I come in on that. I think he's carried up the stairs by his giant bodyguard, but I like your version where he's faking it better.
Yeah. I've said this many times. I have this vision in my mind, you know, that he gets to a certain place, looks around that no one's looking, stands up, goes up the stairs. You know, his man brings the chair upstairs. He sits back down, puts the, you know, puts like a blanket over him, over his legs again, and then continues along.
Yep.
That's the vision I have in my mind about it. Who knows?
The same as R2-D2.
That's right. So Potter starts this minute in the middle of his conversation, and he says, "Examiner is still here." So he started on Friday by saying, "Since the state examiner is still here, as a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds, manipulation, malfeasance." And, you know, George doesn't like this. George is, you know, he's starting to get more nervous about the whole thing. And he just decides that he's leaving here.
When you look at those crimes, malfeasance, you know, or misappropriation of funds, embezzlement and theft is basically what you're looking at when you start talking about that term.
Correct. You know, I mean, do you know what the definition of malfeasance is and manipulation?
Well, yeah, It's where a person uses their, I mean, I don't know the definition, but it's where a person, like a city council person or a bank bank president or somebody, uses their position to manipulate currency and or actions, whatever, and their duties in the commission of a crime.
Yeah. I mean, basically, he's, you know, you can see by the way that Potter is talking that how much of a businessman that he is, you know, that right. He already knows about. I think he's aware of all these things because he himself does it.
Yeah, probably. He's like, and this is exactly how I would do it.
That's right. You know, just the way that he says it, you know, but.
Well, and also, we know by this point, right? Pardon me for not looking at the other minutes. He stole the money. He's the one that got the newspaper full of the money. That's right. Yeah. We already know that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's been able to plan.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to get George right where I want him and shut down that business and loan.
Right. I mean, malfeasance is a willful and unintentional action that injures some other party.
Sure.
You know, so by him saying that, he basically, you know, you're stealing money from a public, you know, from a public fund. You know, yep. I mean, basically, you could say that
and using his position secretly do it.
Right. Correct. I mean, basically, one of the things that I found was is that malfeasance is basically the equivalent of malpractice for a doctor.
Oh, sure. Okay. That makes sense.
You know,
seems like such an old-fashioned word. Never hear anyone getting accused of or convicted of malfeasance now.
Maybe in business it's still a term that's used that I don't know. Yeah. I'm not really sure about that. You know, and George, like I said, George just had enough of it. He puts the insurance papers back in his pocket, and then he just gets up to leave the room and starts walking towards the door. And then Potter goes, "All right, George, go ahead. You can't hide in this little in a little town like this." You know, and then George basically leaves the room at the time. And then Potter says something really very interesting. Something very, very interesting. He goes, he picks up the phone and goes, "Yeah, Bill, this is Potter." So, first of all, do you have any idea who Bill is? Because the only Bill that we really have talked about up until now is Uncle Billy. And I don't think he's calling Uncle Billy.
No, I think Bill is just the name. Like, he's on a first-name basis with either the bank examiner or the sheriff.
Right. I mean, we don't know the name. I don't think we know the name of the sheriff.
This is a complete guess because I didn't go to the end of the movie and watch, but when the cop shows up, it like put a pin in this conversation that we're having and see if he calls that guy Bill.
Interesting. Or if there's a sheriff. There is there's someone who's listed here as sheriff he's in IMDb. You know, so,
oh, okay. Okay.
So it's very possible.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's not calling Bill. He's not calling Billy. He's not calling him. He's just on a first name basis with either the bank examiner or the sheriff, whoever he's calling.
Right. My assumption is it's the what's even stranger to me, not the fact that he calls the guy Bill, but that he says this is Potter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't say this is Henry Potter or this is, you know, this is Mr. Potter or something. This is Potter. You know, like if you call places, would you say this is Blaze?
I've got an issue with my particular last name.
Okay.
But I do say things like, I do often launch with, "Hey, this is Curtis." And then everybody knows who I'm talking about and we can do away with all those pleasantries.
But again, that makes sense. That's the way to do it. I do that too. I'm Rob. There you go. You know, you don't need to deal with that after that. So I mean, there are numerous times in this movie where Potter is just referred to by people as Potter, you know, and
yeah, I think he's just one of those, call everyone their last name. And actually throughout this movie, you know, George is called Bailey. I mean, people just call each other by their last names, especially
nobody calls George Bailey. They don't say they. He's always George Bailey. He's never called just Bailey.
They'll say Mr. Bailey, but Potter calls him Bailey.
No, he calls him George. I don't think he's ever said to him. I don't think he's ever called him just Bailey.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, maybe I'm wrong about that. I could be wrong. If I remember correctly, it's always been George.
One of the things about this time period, I think, is that everybody was in the military or shortly out of the military at this point. And in the military, where the majority of the young men were shortly before this movie takes place, everyone did call each other by their last names.
Correct. But that's the military. We're not talking about the military.
Right.
You know,
we're talking about two people specifically that weren't. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's right. You know, maybe Potter was during World War One in the military. I don't know. You know, but again, or maybe, you know, maybe back in the American Revolution, or maybe he served under Napoleon, and that's why he has the bust of Napoleon.
Timing wise, does that work out?
No. It depends. Well, we've never been able to figure out how old Potter is, because, you know, he looks the same in 1919 as he does in 1945.
He could be 147. You know, also Potter is a nice, forceful sounding name versus Henry, with all that soft stuff floating around.
Correct. Okay.
You can just spit out Potter.
Yeah. And then the shot changes, and, you know, we see George outside. He crosses the street. You see lots of snow all around. He walks over to his car. And did you notice he has trouble? Do you notice he has trouble opening the door to his car?
Yeah, it's about the second or third time.
Yeah.
Like, the first time it comes off in his hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this time he has to just climb over the thing to get in. I had a car like that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's something that you see in, movies in the 60s, you know, like Grease and stuff, you know, Grease came out in the 70s, but, you know, that was the time when people, you know, just would slide into their race cars and stuff like that. So I like the way that they do this, that they have him just climb over. I can't get that door open.
Right. The reoccurring thing with his piece of crap car.
Yeah.
All the things that Capra does in this movie to show, like George has this wonderful life, except he doesn't see it because of the details. One of those details are the door that always comes off or won't open.
Right.
On his car.
That's right. And you the know, knob and the knob comes. On the on the banister.
Yeah, all of those things always going wrong for him. Ugh.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys have talked about the snow in this movie. Have you?
Yes, we briefly talked about it, but if you would like to, we can talk about it again.
I'm just wondering, knowing what you know now, what it's made out of, and how they had to make all that happen, because I don't want to revisit that. Well, it's been a while. So we know that it's made out of snowflakes and aqueous firefighting foam and sugar and cornflakes. The stuff in the air is the firefighting foam and the snow. Or I'm sorry. The stuff in the air is the soap flakes. The stuff that is sticking to things is the firefighting foam, and the stuff they have to walk through to give it thickness is the sugar and the cornflakes and the firefighting foam and the soap.
Right.
Just disgusting. And so now, every time and I've known this now for years, for a couple of decades I've known this, because I've looked it up going, they really have some really convincing snow going on here for 1940, whatever. Like, how did this work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've been a part of productions where we had to have snow and it didn't look this good. And I wondered to myself, did they just go to like Ohio and film real snow? Did they just wait until it was a blizzard? No. It's this gross concoction of stuff. And I see him walking through this, and I'm thinking about the actors, imagine what it must be like to be Jimmy Stewart on the day of where he has to cross the street through this this cat-deep concoction of slippery garbage, and what that must smell like all over the place, and what that must taste like. Because they're filming this thing, correct me if I'm wrong, at a valley in Encino Valley, right, in California, mm-hmm. and they've just built all the fronts and everything, and it's like 80 degrees, 90 degrees there when they're filming this. So all of that heat and all of that gross soap all over the place, slimy all over thing, you're walking through this and your feet are just getting soaked. It's just going down in your shoes and up your pants, like, ugh. I guess I'm just imagining these actors having to like tromp through this stuff all the time, every time it's winter.
But it looks, you know, great.
And the ladies are just doing it in high heels. Ugh.
True. Well, like I said, it looks great. So that's the important thing. You know, it doesn't matter what they had to go through, what hell they needed to go through to get it to get it made, but it just looks really good on film.
Yeah, movie magic.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things before we completely leave his office is that typically Capra was filming Potter so that it would be slightly below his, you know, from his chest, so that Potter would be looking down at the camera, very powerful. But he would have it so that the bodyguard, whatever his name is out of the shot. So all you see is his chest. So you don't get this sense that Potter is lower than anyone in the room. Every time you see him, it's kind of from his from someone else's point of view of Potter looking down.
Right.
I guess when they're doing over the shoulder shots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular scene, that changes completely. Now we're looking over Potter's shoulder down at George, and you've got Napoleon and you've got the bodyguard in the shot, which is rare for this movie. Everybody staring down at George as he goes through this awful thing that he's experiencing, realizing that he's about to get the cops called on him for these really serious felonies, financial, you know, shenanigans. I just think it was interesting that Capra, sort of, who didn't use many camera moves or much cinematic trickery, to just change like that, to still be aware that he could pull off power visually that way.
And he does it. He definitely manages to do it.
Yeah, because this guy really doesn't. He just does a lot of. In fact, this whole thing, all of the minutes that I'm on for the show this week, Capra does a lot of that. He does a lot of panning. He does a lot of things to great effect that are just things you can do as a kid with a phone these days.
Sure.
And it still works better than a lot of really dynamic camera work for modern directors.
Right. I agree with you on that.
Very cool stuff. Anyway,
yeah.
Here we are, nope. Climbing over the door of the car. Sorry.
That's then the scene changes where we see an external shot of Martini's bar, and then we go inside and we see George, you know, sitting and drinking at the bar. And then we hear in the background Martini go, "Oh, Merry Christmas, glad you come." And then we hear a man say, "How about some of that good spaghetti?" Martini goes, "We got everything."
Cinematically, I love the way that this wipe is used. It's going from what, right to left. He's doing this. Am I doing that right? Right to left? Left to right? He's doing this wipe.
Goes from right to left, yes.
And yeah, it goes from right to left. And it suggests, it instead of just being a shot of Martini's, wow, let me say this a different way. If George climbed in his car, and then the next thing we see is just a static shot of Martini's, it'd be like, well, now what's going on here? But instead, what we have is we have a wipe, an old-fashioned wipe. And that wipe alone is enough to make your mind think that George traveled there.
That's right.
Before you even see him in the bar. And I kind of love that. I don't think wipes are used enough anymore. Of course, that could just be because I grew up with Star Wars and George Lucas kind of reestablishing the language of cinema that way.
Right. Okay, so as George is sitting at the bar, so there we hear music playing in the background. Are you familiar with the song? It's called the Vieni Vieni.
I'm not familiar with the song. I was going to ask you, though, if that was like a live person in there or whether that was a recording that they were playing.
You know what? I think it was a combination of both because there is a woman behind George, and it's possible that she's singing in the background and that there's a man singing with her.
That's what I was kind of wondering. Because we only see her briefly, and she could be singing, but she could also just be lively talking to somebody and not be part of the
Right,
scene.
I mean,
So
but in the
that's why I was
credits on
they actually
IMDb,
hired the woman.
in the credits on IMDb, it does state that there is a woman who's the singer at Martini's. It's an actress named Adriana Casalotti. Have you ever heard that name before?
Oh, okay. I don't really know who she is. Who am I kidding? I have no idea who she is.
Okay.
A singer from 1930, from 48.
Exactly. I mean, she actually was the she did the voice of Snow White in Disney's original Snow White, in 1937.
Oh, that makes sense because she's doing that sound here in the song. She's doing that
Oh, I thought you were going to say she's doing the
thing,
hi ho.
right?
Hi ho.
She's doing that like that whistly opera thing that Snow White does.
Oh
Wow.
wow.
Sweet.
Yeah, and she also is known for being the first woman to ever wear a bikini in public. I don't know why.
Nice.
I don't know why you'd think that before the 1930s there were people wearing bikinis, but I don't know. That's what they say. And apparently, through the rest of her life, she would sing Snow White songs in Snow White's voice. Like
Nice.
kids, she would have visitors, and she would start singing in Snow White's voice and stuff like that.
Just randomly, like weirdly, like in an unhinged way,
Yeah.
they'd just be like, "Hi, Adriana," and she'd be like, "Oh,
Exactly. And apparently
wow."
her home was filled with so much like Snow White memorabilia and stuff like that.
So she's kind of a. I mean, are you saying like she's unhinged, like a hoarder of
Well,
Snow White
she
stuff?
also tried suing Disney, Walt Disney, in order to get more money from the film's profits, but she lost.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. Oh, I hope the whole time she was also doing it in a bikini.
That I don't know. It was it. We just know it's vocal, not visual. So who knows?
Okay. Wow, that's crazy. Just this little connection here. When was Snow White? That was
No, it was
after this, of course
1937.
it was. Oh, it was before this.
Yeah.
Oh, way before
Yeah,
this.
yeah, yeah.
So she was already like already doing the Snow White thing, already incorporating that into her music.
Correct.
Already by 1945, 40, whenever that
Well,
was.
the movie came out in 46, so she m must have been,
Yeah.
it was probably filmed in mid 45, which is this is her
Yeah.
last acting credit, on IMDb. She only has 10 acting credits, but this is the final one, even though she lived for another 50 years, after this.
I mean, was she on screen a lot? She flashed behind George for a second
Yeah,
there,
that's it.
as we're doing that sort of famous push into him praying.
And
This is the minute where he prays.
yes, and then that's
No, that's.
exactly where I was going next. That George is sitting there, and he just says,
Oh,
"Oh God,
he says,
oh
God is God.
God,"
He starts.
and that's how this minute actually ends. He doesn't actually get the prayer out. He's first asking for God. That's all he's doing. And
You know what's great about this? Oh, go ahead.
that's how this minute ends. Did
What I love about this is that if you're paying attention to the beginning of the movie, this exact minute is when God and Joseph are calling Clarence over to have their conversation about this guy. Everybody's praying for him, but this is the exact thing because the last thing that happens in that very first scene is they're showing martinis, and then you go up to the MST Keith MST3K moon, and that pulls aside, and you see God and Joseph Starr there.
Correct. I don't. It's not at this exact moment because Martini's not praying yet. Martini's only going to be praying, for Georgia's safety towards the end of this week.
That's a really good point. I never thought about that. Well, that's what I get for not watching the movie 1 minute at a time over the course of several months.
You still have time to catch up. All right. So, Curtis, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute before we get to the segment?
I'm an appreciator of Capra's camera work in this movie. I didn't realize how few moves he had to work with cinematically, and he still made an amazing movie.
Yes, that he definitely did.
One that you could just about watch it with sound off and know what's going on.
Well, I've talked about this before, that Capra was, for this movie at least, he was a very visual director. And that's why there's a lot of visual cues in this movie that you have to really be paying attention in order to catch them. You can't just listen. You have to also be watching. You know, even going back to the simple scene of seeing Mr. Gower looking at the picture of his son and reading the telegram and things like that. You know, these are things that you can't just pick up audibly.
Right. And he didn't do anything. He barely did any tracking shots. He barely did any close-ups. All he did was, like, plant his camera on a tripod and pan.
That's right.
That's all he did. I mean, there were a couple of tracking shots. There's a couple of tracking shots and a couple of close-ups, but mostly this guy.
Just when George is running through Bedford Falls.
Yeah. Other than that, he just plopped down on a comfy chair and a tripod and made an amazing movie.
Hey, if it works, why not?
Yeah. So that's the last thing I have to say. That's one of the things I realized here coming into this little project.
Okay.
This movie's by
me. All right, great. So normally on Friday we do the segment Oscar Oops, but because, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of today's episode, things are a little strange and I'm changing things around and everyone's looking at their watch saying, "Hey, today's not Friday, today's Sunday." But since Curtis won't be with us on Friday, so we're going to do a Friday segment today. So the segment is called Oscar Oops. Basically, over the 96 years, you know, there have been many strange decisions made by the Oscar voters that are always controversial. Some people like them, some people don't like them, whatever. So this segment basically lends the idea that, each of my guests will be able to talk about their top five movies that they think should have won an Oscar, as opposed to the movie that won Best Picture that year.
Oh, man. You know, I can't imagine, knowing the guests that have been on before me, that you guys haven't thrown all kinds of shade at how green was my valley.
So you start with your number five and work your way up.
Number five, I didn't do it in order. Let's see. My least favorite of the five movies here that I've chosen would probably be Maltese Falcon, who lost to How Green Was My Valley. I forget the year.
That was 1941.
Maltese Falcon. It's one of those movies. It was my introduction to noir detective movies. And I just loved it. It was an amazing movie to me. And How Green Was My Valley, which I've never seen, can't have been as Maltese Falcon. It just can't. There's no way. My wife and I were just talking about this just before recording this, and she's like, you know, we should just see this movie. So I think we're actually going to watch How Green Was My Valley at some point. It sounds kind of interesting. Bunch of miners, a little kid growing up in a mining town, watching the problems with all that causes, yada, yada, yada. Starring Roddy McDowall, by the way.
Yes.
The ape guy. Mm-hmm. So must be kind of okay. It won Best Picture after all. Anyway, that's my number five. That's my least favorite movie on this list.
Okay.
Should I just keep going, or do you want to talk about How Green Is My Valley? Because I'm sure you have enough.
Keep going. Keep going.
Number four. God, number four. Okay, I'm putting these in order. Jeez, wow. Oh. Saving Private Ryan is probably my number four. And I'm sure Shakespeare in Love has gotten lots of hate on this list, too.
I actually just watched Saving Private Ryan earlier today.
Yeah. Have you seen Shakespeare in Love?
Of course.
It's a fun movie, for
It's
sure.
a fun movie, but it's no it's Saving nice Private Ryan. Rom-com.
How? How did it be Saving Private Ryan, for God's sake? Grown men walking out of the movie weeping at the sheer artistry and that movie brought into the world. And Shakespeare in Love is the one that wins. Oh, anyway. So, number three. I'm probably going to go, do I like that better? Probably back to How Green Is My Valley and say, how did that beat Citizen Kane? Citizen Kane, the movie that defined cinematic language for the age. Citizen Kane taught everybody else that came after it how to make movies. The language of moving pictures. And How Green Was My Valley Beat.
See, now I have a question for you because of that. So you've chosen two movies from the same year that you think should have won Best Picture over How Green Was My Valley. but if you had to now choose between those two, so I'm assuming you would choose Citizen Kane because it's listed higher on your list than The Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, Citizen Kane, way better than The Maltese Falcon. Citizen Kane is just a superior movie. In fact, the two movies that are above it on my list aren't even on there because they're better. That I just like them more.
Okay.
I think Citizen Kane is actually the best movie on my list.
Okay.
In terms of artistry and everything. Although, you know, Star Wars, which is next, comes close. Star Wars, we don't even have to talk about. This is not an audience that needs Star Wars described to it. Lost to Annie Hall. Which, you know, I know that it's Woody Allen is a troubling figure to talk about these days. But back before we knew all that, his movies were real good.
Yeah, Annie Hall is one of my favorite. Is one of my favorite Woody Allen movies. I think it's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, it's not.
I'm a head on her sister's guy, but whatever. Probably because he pooped on me. He pooped on me scene, but that's beside the point. Annie Hall, good movie, but it's no Star Wars. Come on, is that just my bias showing?
No,
is a stupid sci-fi flick about a walking rug.
Well, actually, it's not just better about than a walking rug.
Anyway, that's my number two, and then my number one, of course, it's the answer to the question whenever a movie's on, or at least something that's said a lot by me and friends of mine. I could have been watching Raiders. And as good as Chariots of Fire is, it's no Raiders. I'm watching Chariots of Fire, but I'm thinking I could be watching Raiders right now.
Okay,
that's number one.
That is definitely
stolen. Great. Yeah. I love me some Chariots of Fire. You know, actually, I haven't seen it in a long time. Maybe I was just a snob back in the 80s, and I watch it now, and it's boring and stupid. But but it was a good movie. It was a good movie when it came out.
That's true.
The soundtrack certainly was all over the place. It was ubiquitous. It was part of the fabric of my life. But how did Raiders not? I can see. Okay, let me say this differently. I can see how Raiders lost because Chariots of Fire is definitely like a kind of snobby movie that the Oscar people like.
I guess there's your answer.
Yeah. So that's my list.
All right, great.
How close is that to everyone else?
Everyone has been different.
Everyone has really been different. Star Wars, Raiders, and Citizen Kane and crap aren't on.
Oh, they're on a lot of people's lists. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I imagine, that goes without saying. How Green Is My Valley and Shakespeare in Love have to be two of the biggest defenders. Generally.
All right. Well, yeah, you see, you and the rest of the listeners will have to come back at the end of this season to find out, what movies were chosen the most. You know, unless you're telling them
you're at keeping
home.
Score. How cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely am coming back to listen to that, so sure.
Okay. That would be great. All right. So, Curtis, why don't you tell people where they can find Curtis Blaze?
Okay. Well, my name's hard to spell, and the website is weird. If you know what Linktree is, which is just a place where you put links to stuff, mine is Linktree/Curtis Blaze. Blaze is spelled like blows. I should have just put the wrong spelling so it'd be easier for people to do, but whatever. So Linktree/Curtis Blaze, and you'll find everything, Instagram, Facebook, all my podcasts, Blaze Portraits, where my photography is, the news that I do for the local town, all that stuff, all there. Find all my stuff there.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.